Old Testament. 2 Kings chapter 11. We're actually going to start off before where we left off. So 2 Kings chapter 11, verse 1. Athaliah, the mother of Ahaziah, saw that her son was dead. Remember, Jehu had come along, and Jehu had slaughtered many of Ahab's household, including the southern king, Ahaziah. So, Jehu kills Ahaziah. When Athaliah, the mother of Ahaziah, saw her son was dead, she rose and destroyed all the royal offspring. So she kills all of Ahaziah's children. But Jehosheba, the daughter of King Joram, sister of Ahaziah, took Joash, the son of Ahaziah, and stole him from among the king's sons who were being put to death, and placed him and his nurse in a bedroom. So they hid him from Athaliah, and he was not put to death. So he was hidden with her in the house of the Lord 6 years while Athaliah was reigning over the land. Okay, I threw up this chart last week. I'm going to throw it up here again. This is the family tree of Ahab. Who can tell me anything they want to about Ahab? Ahab.
He was evil.
Evil. This guy. Oh, I don't have it done. Okay, sorry. So this guy right here. Evil. Not nice. Bad meaning. Anybody else? Tell me anything else about anybody up here. Anybody on the screen?
Jezebel is also evil.
She's a bad meaning. What did she do? She slaughtered the prophets of God. Okay, Omri. He was Ahab's father. What kind of a man was he? No.
Wasn't quite as bad as
Ehud, I think. Sorry?
Wasn't quite as bad as Ahab.
But close, right. Before him, of Omri, it says there was nobody as evil as he was. He's, I think, the first one it says that of. And then Ethbaal. Now, you don't know this from the Bible, but you know it from secular history, that this man was a priest of Baal who killed the king in Phoenicia to become king. Okay? So, Jezebel, little cute little Jezebel, that's the household she grew up in. Daddy's a murderer. Okay, so not a nice place. Athaliah, murderer. Jehoram, Ahaziah, they're all evil. Every single person up here is evil. Oh, how exciting. All right? I left my phone, so that totally throws me off and pushing my thing. Okay, so then there's Jehoshaphat. We'll come over to Jehoshaphat. Do you remember about Jehoshaphat? What about him? Anybody, anything? This is the southern kingdom now. Jehoshaphat was a good guy. Made some mistakes. One of them being, turn to 2 Chronicles. Sorry, go ahead.
Allying himself with the northern kingdom. By
marriage. Right. 2 Chronicles 20, nope, 18. 2 Chronicles 18, verse 1, Jehoshaphat had great riches and honor, and he allied himself by marriage with Ahab. We don't know who his wife was. We might be able to take a guess, but we don't know who it was. It doesn't say. All right, but he marries into the bad family in the north, okay? Jehoram, his son, evil. Ahaziah, his son, evil. We don't know anything about him, but what do we know about this woman? She's a good woman. Jehosheba. That's who we're reading about in 2 Kings chapter 11. Jehosheba, the daughter of King Joram, sister of Ahaziah, took Joash, the son of Ahaziah, and stole him from among the kings and put him in the temple, and there they kept him for 6 years. All right. So you've got her. Now she stands out, except for him. She stands out from everybody we've just talked about, and they're all related. What does this tell you? That is possible. What is possible? It doesn't matter what kind of family you're in, you can become good. I think I quoted you verbatim there. Right. It doesn't matter. You don't have to be like your family. Now, if your family's faithful, you want to be like your family, but if your family's it doesn't matter what your background is. You can choose to get out of it. Right? Comment or question on that? Anybody raise their hand? Okay. Gary?
Well, that's all right. You'll probably make the point.
Okay, so it sure helps to marry. Somebody who's faithful, somebody who's mature, somebody who's godly. 2 Chronicles 22, this same woman, we find out something more about her. And we made this point last week. 2 Chronicles 22, verse 11. Now, her name over here is Jehoshabeath, but you see Jehosheba in there. The king's daughter took Joash, the son of Ahaziah, and stole him from among the king's sons who were being put to death, and placed him and his nurse in the bedroom. So Jehoshabeath, the daughter of King Joram, the wife of Jehoiada the priest. Do you see that? Did you catch that? And you remember from preparing for last week, the driving force behind Joash and his ascension to king when he's only 7 years old is this man, Jehoiada, who is the high priest. And here you see, oh, who did she marry? What's her situation? Her family background is not exactly, it's dysfunctional, we would say, right? But yet she ends up doing well. Part of the reason I suspect she did well is because of who she married. It pays. It helps to marry somebody who's, you have an infant that has the croup. I'm sure some of us have experienced that before. All night long, you're scared. And you're listening. And you're listening all night long, and you hear every little tiny different wheeze. And that baby, what that baby needs is, if there's a wheeze that goes the wrong way, you need to be there to help it. The same thing with somebody who has, this person, this Jehosheba, who comes out of this, she might have been rock solid strong. However, she might not have been. And he might have been her only lifeline. He might have been the one who is helping her all along the way. He's watching her. He loves her because she's his wife. And he loves her because she's a person. And he's helping her. He's helping her develop her faith all along. Or maybe they were two rock solid people. And then it's just throwing gas on the fire when they got married. It helps to marry somebody who's faithful and godly. Why? Why? I've kind of hinted at it. I've kind of said it. But why? What happens? What happens between these two? Go ahead.
The reason we marry someone who is of the same faith, believing in God, is because God is the one who is our, that holds us to account. And so therefore, our mate will also hold us to account because we are of God.
Our mate will hold us to account. How does that happen? What happens? I mean, tell me the logistics behind the mates holding to each other to account. They, how?
Spiritually.
They say things to each other. They communicate. Right. They're encouraging one another, okay? Right, that's what I'm going for. Right, they're not just two robots that live in the world and occasionally interact. No. They're there to help each other. They have chosen each other to help each other because it's the most important thing they could possibly do is get to heaven. And so they're looking at this person. They're saying, hey, you know what? Life is tough. I don't do very well all the time, do I? And so I need all the help I can get. And there is nothing more important. There's nothing more influential than what? Husband or wife. You're not going to find it. Let me, while I'm off on this little tangent, husbands and wives, be sure to explicitly encourage your spouse in spiritual things. Explicitly. Do it. Proverbs 31, you remember the woman, the wife from God? Proverbs 31, something her husband does for her. Because she's worthy of it. But he also does it. The point is when there's something worthy of it, you do it. What does he do? Verse 28, her children rise up and bless her, her husband also, and he praises her. Wife, you have done well. And his standard for determining what is well is what? This book, right here. So he says, honey, you've just did this. You've just done this. Look what you did. Thank you, honey. You did good. You might not call your honey, honey. Well, whatever you call her. Right? He praises her. Many daughters have done nobly, but you excel them all. That, and there's some explicit wives. Turn over to Proverbs 15. You know, I used to have a substitute teacher in school that would say, things go both ways, things go both ways. This is things go both ways. Proverbs 15:23, a man has joy in an apt answer, and how delightful is a timely word. Husbands, you have a woman that's doing what she ought to be, tell her. Because guess what? It's not always easy to do what's got to be done. And so when she does it, what does she want? She wants a little encouragement. Husbands, wives, when you've got a man who, you know, is barely going along, or he's strong as whatever, and he does something right, what do? You tell him. I don't know how. I don't know how you interact and communicate with your husband and wife. But you tell him, especially the weaker they are, hey, thank you for doing that. Thank you for doing that. When we were in Arizona visiting Ryan and Sophia, Ryan has just taken off. He's like, you know, a rocket just lit up and exploded. Sophia is right there with him. And I told her, you know, they're hovering around these little congregations where, you know, they might not be getting all the encouragement that they need. So who are they going to get from? Each other. Exactly. They're like this little island. I told her, I said, look, Sophia, encourage him whenever he does this little stuff. You know, and that's not, you know, sometimes it's embarrassing to encourage somebody. Well, get over it because they need it. Comments or questions on this? Okay. So back here in 2 Kings 11, Athaliah, verse 13, heard the noise of the guard, because you see they're anointing Joash as king. She hears the noise of the guard and of the people. She came to the people of the house of the Lord. She looked, and behold, the king was standing by the pillar, according to the custom, with the captains and the trumpeters beside the king, and all the people of the land rejoiced and blew trumpets. Then Athaliah tore her clothes and cried, treason, treason! And Jehoiada, the priest, commanded the captains and the hundreds who were appointed over the army and said to them, bring her out between the ranks, and whoever follows her, put her to death with the sword. For the priest said, let her not be put to death in the house of the Lord. So they seized her, and when she arrived at the horse's entrance of the king's house, she was put to death there. But I tell you what she did. She broke the glass ceiling, didn't she? Athaliah. I mean, just look at what she accomplished. She's accomplished more than most women in this world ever will, didn't she? What's the glass ceiling? Women in whatever. Right. And the whatever being roles that they're, in this case, not supposed to be in. No, no. Who's supposed to be the king? A guy. Right? Not Athaliah. So she, no matter what, she did things that some women, they would be all right there and say, you go, girl. You go. Look what you have done. You're a role model for what you have done. But in God's eyes, what was she? A sinner. And I will say even worse, a usurper? I think I was hearing the word up here. Rebellious. Right, she's a usurper. Because she's not supposed to be there. So the world looks at her and say, oh, wow. You go, girl. But in reality, God's looking at her and saying, you need to repent and you need to get out of that position. Can you think of any relevant applications today? Go ahead, don't be shy. Okay, females in the ministry. The what? Go ahead.
Pastoral roles.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. It's funny. You usually mention that, and I'm usually thinking something else. That is valid, obviously. So George is getting at women in leadership positions in the church where there's mixed men and women. What does God say about that? No, no. Right? In fact, does anybody tell me the passage where something like that might be said? 1 Corinthians 14. Oh, so it's not only one place. Because if it's only one place, well then.
It's obscure.
Right, it's obscure. No. Okay. I'm also thinking of, well, let's just go there and turn there. 1 Timothy 2 is the first passage I have in mind. First Timothy 2, I'll just jump right into the context. Verse 11, a woman must quietly receive instruction with entire submissiveness. I do not allow a woman to teach or exercise authority over a man, but to remain quiet. For it was Adam who... Blah, 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 blah. Go on and on. So, George said he was talking about positions in the church, positions of authority in a local congregation. Right. No, no. No, no. I do not allow a woman to teach or exercise authority over a man. Can you think of anywhere else? Does this only have to do with the church? This is life. Life. Right? Oh, but you go ahead and you break that glass barrier. No. Don't do it. It won't be worth it. Titus chapter 2. Now this is a general plan. Not everybody is going to fit into this plan in Titus chapter 2. Verse 3. Older women likewise are to be reverent in their behavior, not malicious gossips, nor enslaved to much wine, teaching what is good, so that they may encourage the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be sensible, pure workers at home. Did you catch the last part? Workers at home. That's generally... Now, that's not going to fit into every situation, but generally speaking, the older women are to teach the younger women to go out and get jobs and have a career. No, right? I just totally butchered it. I said exactly opposite of what the text says, right? Love your children. Be sensible, pure. Workers at home. Okay? That's the general. So, we think it's time, it's about time America had a what? A woman president. Not in God's eyes. Sorry, it ain't time. She might be the smartest person out there. Most qualified in every other way. But one. And the one is the way God said no. Again, this isn't about value in God's eyes. It's about the roles that he has given to us. Comments or questions on this? Yes?
Sir, not this thought exactly, but it's about her and... her accomplishments and all that. It's interesting to me to see her yell truth and treason when actually that wasn't what was going on at all. And you will always see people who are trying to do evil things have to misrepresent what is taking place around them to try to gain any support from their side. You will always see that. Proverbs talks about when it contrasts good and bad, it doesn't make a one-for-one contrast. It says bad is deception. Mm-hmm. And that's right. You know, you have to misrepresent evil for you to get any support for it, or you have to represent good as evil. You have to misrepresent the good to get any support for where you want to go with that thing.
The term concentration camp. What pops in your head? World War II. Do you know that was before World War II? It was less, it wasn't a bad word. It wasn't a bad word before World War II. That's why they used it. Oh, we're just going to put them in the concentration camps. Oh, everything's fine. Nowadays, if we said that, we'd understand what it really is, okay? Changing definitions. That's what she did. You're saying to mask evil, you've got to cover it up somehow, and one of the biggest ways is just change the definition of the word. Treason! No. Gary?
Really, that goes along with how do you, get away with it, like change the definition thing, but you have to lie to them.
Right.
It's a continual lie. And another thing is, when you said that God's wishing for her to repent, you can see that God didn't have her killed immediately on the spot.
Right.
Take her out. You have a little bit of time after lying.
Yeah.
You know they're going to take you out to that horse cage to execute you there.
Right.
At that time, you're going to face God.
Right.
7 years previous.
Yeah, and the whole, yeah. Right. But especially now.
Especially now.
Right. Now is...
These guards aren't taking you out to...
Yeah. Give you flowers. Okay, so back here in chapter 11, 2 Kings chapter 11, I skipped over this part. Verse 9, the captains of the hundreds did according to all that Jehoiada the priest commanded. And each one of them took his men who were to come in on the Sabbath, and those who were to go out on the Sabbath and came to Jehoiada the priest. The priest gave the captain of hundreds the spears, the shields which had been King David's, which were in the house of the Lord. The guards took each with his weapons in his hand from the right side of the house to the left side of the house by the altar and by the house around the king. Then he brought the king's son out, put the crown on him, and gave him the testimony. What is that talking about? The law. Deuteronomy 17. Go ahead and turn there. In Israel, if you had a king, guess what he got? Yes. Right. He interpreted, he wrote it down himself. He didn't interpret it, unless it would be later, but they didn't have kings later. So Deuteronomy 17, verse 18, it should come about, when he sits on the throne of his kingdom, he shall write for himself a copy of this law. It shall be with him, and he shall read it all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God by carefully observing all the words of this law and these statutes, that his heart may not be lifted up above his countrymen, and that he may not turn aside from the commandment to the right or the left, so that he and his sons may continue long in his kingdom in the midst of Israel. Give him the book. Give him the book so that he will learn to fear God. Can you think of a New Testament application? One that's very, very, very applicable to most of the people in this room. Many of the people. Okay. Give him the book so that he will what? Learn to fear God. Who in here needs to learn to fear God? Every one of us. Especially our children. Right? Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the training or discipline and instruction. It's the same thing. Okay, so how do you do it? You say, here, child, here's your book. In fact, I brought my book. October 28th, 1981. Good job. Very good. First rate, and then fantastic down here with butterflies. I don't know who gave me butterflies. Anyway, so here's my first Bible. So somebody was doing me good. And when I was 8 years old, I was 8 years and 2 months old. And they came up to me. And by the way, do most 8-year-olds get a book like this? I'm not sure if I should have gotten this exact book like that, but the point is valid. The point is here. You give them the book. You sit them down and you say, this is the book. Learn it. Memorize it. Because you're going to need it all the days of your life. And then if you've obeyed it, what happens afterwards? So our parents, as parents, we have to give them
the book.
Right.
So you really want to read it and understand it? Write it.
Write it down.
Write it all down.
Yeah. While you're taking notes, remember you're supposed to write the words down so that you hear them and you see them and you write them. And that way it gets pounded into your head, right? And then there are the three R's, which are repetition, repetition, repetition. Okay. So back in 2 Kings 11, they make him king. They kill Athaliah. Verse 17, they give him a book, remember? Verse 17, then Jehoiada made a covenant between the Lord and the king and the people, that they would be the Lord's people, and also between the king and the people. And all the people of the land went into the house of Baal, tore it down, his altar and his images. They broke it to pieces thoroughly, and killed Matan, the priest of Baal, before the altars. And the priest appointed officers according to the house of the Lord. I mean, they're just going whole hog here. They're giving the king the book. They're making a covenant. And then as a result of these things, they are going into the intruder, the enemy's house, and killing them all, or getting rid of them. And then it says that they set up officers over the house of the Lord. Turn with me to 2 Chronicles. 2 Chronicles 23, which is the parallel account. 2 Chronicles 23, 18, we're picking up exact same verse. Moreover, Jehoiada placed the officers, placed the offices of the house of the Lord under the authority of the Levitical priests, whom David had assigned over the house of the Lord to offer burnt offerings of the Lord, as it is written in the law of Moses, with rejoicing and singing according to the order of David. And you remember where David got his instructions from? From God. So right here, I mean, they just went right back to the book. They're doing it all by the book. And then they go in, and chapter 24 is they repair the temple. Verse 4, it came about after this that Joash decided to restore to the house of the Lord. Verse 14, when they had finished, they brought the rest of the money before the king, Jehoiada, and it was made into utensils for the house of the Lord. Utensils for the service of the burnt offering and pans and utensils of gold and silver. They offered burnt offering in the house of the Lord continually all the days of Jehoiada. So they're doing what they should do. This sounds exciting. Verse 15, Jehoiada reached a ripe old age when he died. He was 130 years old, and they buried him in the city of David among the kings. He's a priest being buried with the kings because what he has done. Whole lesson out of that. Verse 17. But after the death of Jehoiada, the officials of Judah came and bowed down to the king, and the king listened to them, and they abandoned the house of the Lord, the God of their fathers, and served the Asherim and the idols. But wait a minute. I thought he had the book. He had the book, didn't he? He had the book. What happened?
He wasn't paying attention to the book. He started paying attention, he started listening to the people instead of the book.
Right. He went off, he got distracted. Oh, Satan took his focus from the book somewhere else, and it doesn't matter where else it is. Here's the book. Look at the book. Stare at the book. I thought they made a covenant. They had a book and a covenant. I learned two things from this. It takes more than a book and a promise, doesn't it? Oh, I gave them a book. Parents, remember we were talking about parents a second ago. Parents, raise up your children. Give them the book. Okay. And what does it mean to give the book? Here.
Read it.
I didn't get that. Oh, right. Okay. Right. Here. Yes, read it. Yeah, here. Here's the book. Here you go, Lee. And, you know, when I was 8 years and 2 months, here you go, Lee. Now, don't bother me because I got to go back to milking cows or whatever it was. Right? No. No. That, give them the book. Make sure that they're doing it. Pound it in. But even then, they were doing it. They were doing it. Until they got distracted, right? It takes more than past obedience. It takes a lifetime of commitment. Here's something interesting. In this story, we have one person who didn't know what happened to Joash. He didn't know what happened to Joash. As far as he knew, Joash would lead the rest of his life in faithfulness. Who was that one person?
Jehoiada.
Because Jehoiada died. So Jehoiada, you know, he's got his life. He raised this kid from a baby, and he's doing well. He's doing well. And then Jehoiada dies, and as all Jehoiada could ever know is that, well, he continued to do faithfully, right? Don't ever be confident. Remember when Joshua and Moses and those people were dying? They knew, okay, my time's up. What did they say to all the people? You're going to be fine. Keep on doing what you're doing.
Be strong and courageous.
There's always the warning in there. Never, ever be confident. Yes, somebody's been doing well for this many years. Guess what can happen?
All of a sudden, savage wolves aren't going to sneak in. They're going to try to get you.
Right. Right. You might be going to rest, but nobody else is when you die, unless you all die together, which wouldn't be that bad. Okay. Yep.
Hosheba, she had bad family behind her.
Yeah.
She conviction.
Right.
Convicted to do what's right. He was being taught to do what's right his whole life.
Yeah.
And he didn't have that conviction.
And what?
He was easily swayed.
Right.
He was swayed by the others.
Yeah. And what a waste of resources he had. What did he had an upbringing that was so privileged, spiritually speaking, compared to her upbringing. And he did what with it? He threw it away in the end. It goes on. Somehow I got way out of the text. Verse 19. Verse 18. The wrath came upon Judah and Jerusalem for their guilt. Yet he sent prophets to warn them, to bring them back to the Lord. Though they testified against them, they would not listen. Then the Spirit of God came upon Zechariah, the son of Jehoiada, the priest, and he stood above the people and said to them, "Thus God has said to you, why do you transgress the commandments of the Lord and do not prosper? Because you have forsaken the Lord, he has also forsaken you." 21. So they conspired against him. And at the command of the king, they stoned him to death in the court of the house of the Lord. Thus Joash, the king, did not remember the kindness which his father Jehoiada had showed him, but he murdered his son. And as he died, he said, "May the Lord see and avenge." Wow. Now, so put yourself in Joash's position. When he's a little boy, he gets this book. He starts doing it. He continues to do it. In fact, he's the one that implements the temple to be fixed. I'm guessing around that time, if you had asked him, "Do you think someday you're going to forsake the Lord?" He would have said, No. Never. Do you think someday that you're going to forsake the Lord just this little bit? Somebody's going to come and talk to you and you're going to listen to them instead of him? No. Never. Do you think someday that you're going to forsake the temple? Do you think someday you're going to order somebody to be murdered who is sent to you from God? No. But you notice this little, incrementally, small little things snowballed, and what happened? How far one can fall. And here's the observation. If you abandon the Lord in one thing, what is to stop you from abandoning the Lord in all things? Nothing. And you see this with churches. In fact, let me just go on and make this point. If you compromise in something small, is there anything small?
No.
Here's why. Because they can lead to, what do they call that? It's a slippery slope, but I'm thinking of certain kind of drugs are the ones that introduce you to other drugs. Gateway drug. Thank you. Oh, yeah, no, it's just this little, it's not a hard drug. Oh, yeah. Look what it will do. The same thing here. Oh, just a small sin. All right. It's just a small one. Look. Look what happened. Once you throw one away, go ahead and throw the other. And that's what you see with churches who, years ago, would hold the sound doctrine, and now there are homosexual women leading in the pulpit.
Right.
You know, how did it happen? One day somebody stood up in the midst of a sound congregation and said, I think we ought to let homosexual women lead from the pulpit. Is that what happened?
No.
Little by little by little by little. Took hundreds of years. Well, 150 years or so. Depends on where you are.
It reminds me of Psalm, what you're saying reminds me of Psalm 1. It says, do not walk in this path of sinners, but stand in the, or however, you're walking, first you're walking by them. You're compromising a little bit. I'll walk by them. I'll walk kind of with them or whatever. Then you're standing there with them. Then before you know it, you're sitting there doing the same things they are.
Right.
Be careful.
Yeah. Stay away from it. Comments or questions here?
You know, this is a, you know, the Lord has done this many, many times throughout history, but here's a time where it's almost like, okay, I'm going to regenerate the land, both the north and the south. At this point, before Jehoiada dies, when Jehu is in the upper kingdom, Joash and bottom kingdom, Baal is done. Gone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fresh start, let's go.
Right. Didn't take long. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, in the northern kingdom, there was almost Jehovah worship reinstituted. You're so close. Yeah, good point. Do you notice that as Joash and the rest of them were incrementally walking away from the Lord, what was the Lord doing? Sending them prophets. Okay, so here's the question. When somebody is incrementally rebelling against the Lord, whatever state they are in, whether they're just starting to listen to somebody or they're like Athaliah, whether she was ever with the Lord. So somebody's walking away from the Lord, what can we do? What can we do? What do you want to do something, right? You want to
speak to them, pray.
Speak to them, pray.
That's what the prophet did.
Right.
This book, this is what God says.
It says, the Lord sent them prophets to bring them back, and though they, my version says, testified against them. And that's all God can do. That's all God can, because we have what? Free will. We have free will. All he can do is send, here's the message, look what you're doing, here will be the result, hell, there you go. And he can tell them again and again and again, and he can demonstrate it to them 50,000 different ways if he wants to, with powers and signs and wonders, but it's still completely up to them. So the same thing with us. What can we do? There's only so much we can do. We can testify. We pray also. Only the rebel can do the rest. We have to get that into our heads. What can we do? Teach them. Teach them. Teach them. Take the opportunity, teach them. What if that rebel is your friend? Because after all, that is what they are. They're a rebel. So what if that rebel is your friend? Or your family, or part of the flock? Keep the F's. Right? What do you do? What do you do then? Oh, we know what to do. If it's Joash, we know what to do. If it's Joash, we go and we talk to Joash. We say, Joash, look, Matthew 18 says this. Remember, if it's a sinner and they sin against you, Matthew 18 says this. But when it's your family or your friend or somebody in this church, what do? Same thing. So when somebody comes up to me and says, Lee, X, Y, and Z, and they're right, what do? I change. I say thank you for being man or woman enough to come up to me, loving me enough to say, hey, you need to change. Here, is this what you're doing? Yes, it is. Then you need to change. What are you thinking? I'm not. Thank you for helping me. So remember this. We talk about this all the time as though it's some, theory. And it is a theory. But sometimes we have to apply it. And who are we going to apply it to? The people who are closest to us. Go ahead.
Boy, when it's your own family, that can really fight.
Yeah. Yeah. So back in I'm in 2 Chronicles. Yeah, we'll just finish reading there. I think you're probably there. Verse 23, it happened. Chapter 24, verse 23. It happened at the turn of the year that the army of the Arameans came up against him. And they came to Judah and Jerusalem, destroyed all the officials of the people from among the people, and sent all their spoil to the king of Damascus. And by the way, in 2 Kings, it says at this time that Joash is now taking the treasures of the temple and sending it away. So things are getting just horrible. Indeed, the army of the Arameans came up with a small number of men, yet the Lord delivered a very great army into their hands. You notice this is role reversal here. God says, look, if you're faithful, you'll go out with 10 and chase 1,000. Here they're going out with 1,000 and they're getting beat. Why? Because of their unfaithfulness. Verse 25, when they had departed from him, for they left him. This is Joash. They left him very sick. His own servants conspired against him, and the blood because of the blood of the son of Jehoiada, the priest, and murdered him on his bed. So he died. And they buried him in the city of David, but they did not bury him in the tombs of the kings. Oh, wait a minute. Who gets in the tombs of the kings? The faithful guy. Who doesn't? The king who should have been there, but because of his unfaithfulness. These are those who conspired against him. A couple guys, verse 27. And to his sons and the many oracles against him and the rebuilding of the house of God, behold, they are written in the treatise of the book of Kings. Then Amaziah, his son, became king in his place. Remember, he rebuilt the house of God, but he blew it. That good thing that he did? Because remember, God isn't so concerned about all the good things you do. Oh, look at all the good things he has done. Does God need us to do good things? Yes. But is that going to get us into heaven? No. What is it? It's our hearts. You've got to do the good things. And you've got to keep on doing them because that's the kind of heart that you have to have. Joash could have changed the outcome, couldn't he? Remember? It was incremental. Next thing you know, he's killing somebody. And then he has one of the lowest deaths that you read of in the entire Bible. He could have changed it. How? How could he have changed his outcome? Take a stand for what is right, repent, right? Yes, he could have changed his behavior. When should he have changed his behavior?
Right at the first.
At the first, as early as is. Stop now, because look, it's just a little thing, and 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 look what happened to this guy with his little things that turned into a big thing, and then look what happens in the very end. So stop now, or guess what might happen to you? With your life of little things. Oh, just little things. Look what might happen. Comments or questions here?
David could end up here.
Exactly.
Probably would have ended up here.
Right. If he hadn't been approached by Nathan, which, by the way, God sent David a prophet just like him. Right? But David did what? When? Immediately. You're the man. I've sinned. And just as boom, boom, you're the man. I've sinned. God. And then Nathan said to him, you're forgiven.
Wow.
Boom, boom, boom. Just like that.
What a patient God we have.
Yeah. Any other comments or questions?
People talk about what is it that he's the Antichrist Dawkins.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the things he says about God in his thing here, and I think about that every time I read stuff like this. It's like the opportunities and the patience, and talk about bending over backwards, to try to help these people who won't turn around.
Yeah.
You know, these efforts it's just such a lie.
Yeah. What a loving God we have, and to spit in His face, but at the same time, how often have I done it? With the privilege that I have, and every time I choose me over what's right, I do the same thing as Dawkins does. I've got a better background than he does. Remember, I had this when I was 8. Dawkins had the Catholic Church, or the English, the Church of England. Okay, excellent. You ready? You look ready. All right, here's the first question for you. What is the acronym for Calvinism? We're jumping right out of the context. That doesn't matter. Sorry? TULIP. Right, what's it stand for? Yep. Yep. Okay, give me one proof, any, that this doctrine is false. Anything. And probably you're thinking of something different, so don't be afraid to share.
The existence of the Pauline letters show that you can have problems after you become a Christian and can't fall away.
Right. Bible. Okay.
You know what I'm going to do?
Go ahead.
A little baby like George Slack.
Right.
You
condemned.
Yeah, you tell me that? Go ahead.
Anybody else?
When I'm thinking of you made the point earlier when David, or I guess he made the point, when David,
I'll take credit.
David of Beersheba, when David was approached, and he says, "You have done wrong." Nathan says, "You've done wrong," and he says, "I'm sorry. I want to be, or I'm sorry. Please forgive me." And he said, "You're forgiven." Right there. If according to that, we can't even know that we have sinned. We can't even will to do right.
Right. And he couldn't have asked for forgiveness because he wouldn't have needed forgiveness because he was already saved and never lost. Right, we can go, Hebrews talks about, Hebrews 3 and 4 talk about losing our faith. Remember, all these are connected. If you drop one, then they all fall with it. Anybody else? We're going to transition from this question to another one. And it's going to be just as radical.
But you know that.
Go ahead.
I was having this discussion not that long ago with somebody who believed this, and I used a little baby like the station. No way, that baby died. That's not going to hell.
Of course.
Wait, that's what that. You know, a little bit of common sense, and they're like, "Hey, that doesn't make sense at all."
Hey. Yeah. Hey, you planted a seed.
Yeah.
This is. We're not going to refute it in 45 minutes. But you plant a little seed like that. So this guy, Raccoon John Smith, was down there in Kentucky. And he was preaching away before he was known as Raccoon. No, before he was a Christian. He was preaching away. And he stopped right in the middle of his lesson. He said, "Folks, I got to sit down." Because either an infant of his or somebody who was close to him had just died. And according to his doctrine, that infant was condemned to hell. And he said, "That can't be right." So that works. And this man became a Christian and a very effective and powerful speaker he was. All right, so here's the next question. When we try to discover God's will for us, we look for... louder. Right. Can you give me one passage that illustrates this God-given system? Because until you do, I'm just going to say, that's nice, George.
Mark 16:16.
Okay. Which... right. Which is a... command, but that it contains a right. And from that we... right. Yeah, you're right. There you go. So now you just need an example, right? You just open the Bible and turn to one of these places. I like to think of Acts 15 because they're all in it. Although they're not, it's not exactly as clear as what he just did in Acts 15. So if you like Mark 16 better, then go to Mark, whatever works for that person who needs to be taught it. Right? Comment or question on this? Okay. Did you want to say something? No. So here's the next question. Give at least one scriptural justification to begin having potlucks as a work of this church. Anyone? I'm sorry, what?
There is none.
There is none.
The only one that comes to something between meals is 1 Corinthians chapter 11, and it says, eat your meals at home and come to the Lord.
Nice job, John.
You have the love feast talked about
there. Yeah. Okay, so the love feast, which is where? Two places. Three, actually. So Jude, and they were referred to 1 Corinthians 11, saying maybe that's what that was talking about. And what was the key word in there?
Maybe.
Maybe, right? Because we don't really know what it is from Jude. Nobody knows what it is from Jude. You can't figure it out from Jude. And even if you could figure it out, you don't know if the church is using its resources, a work of the church. Okay? And then you go back to Acts chapter 2, verse 40, 41, and then there, and they were all devoting themselves, and they were all doing this and all doing that to fellowship. What's the fellowship? We don't know for sure what exactly it was. So, good. Another question for you. Why does God give us His law, His commandments? What's the purpose? Okay, to find Him? Yes. Excellent. Okay, say the latter part again. Okay, which is what? Use one word. Okay, serve God, okay? And when we serve God, what are we doing? Yeah, we're loving. Right, that's what we're shooting. You're right. Find Him. That's one reason why He gives us this explicit revelation. So, God gives us His commandments to love. Let's just turn to 1 John, where are you going? Okay, 1 John chapter 1. That's not where I was going. Okay, good. I meant to ask, give me a passage. Because, I mean, hey, this is why we're here. You know, this is why we're here, and so we ought to be able to come up with some passage that talks about only the most important thing in the world, right? Jesus' love, and then our love for each other. So you had a couple of different passages. Gary, what is yours?
I mean, anywhere in 1 John.
Go ahead, read one.
John 3:16.
Yeah, John 3:16.
John 4:17.
Yep. Yeah. So I was the passage that I'm turning to is 1 Timothy 1:5. The goal of our instruction is love from a pure heart, a good conscience, and a sincere faith. Because that's what we're supposed to have. Pure heart, good conscience, sincere faith. But the goal of our instruction is, why do we have this whole book? To help us find God. And then the goal of our instruction is. So here's a question for you. So I could be able to refute Calvinism, explain Canny, and apply it, and the whole lot more, but if I neglected to have, I've what? And where does it say that?
Verses 13.
Excellent. But at the same time, how do we learn to love like God would have us love? We've talked by doing the commandments. Right. So I'd say it's a vicious cycle with tongue in cheek, right? You know, we do the commandments so we learn how to love. And we need to know all this stuff. But if we don't have love, then it doesn't mean anything. So we do the commandments to learn how to love. And back and back and back and forth. Doesn't that make sense? Okay. Comments or questions? Go ahead.
I was just going to say, this is one thing in 1 John, obviously we were doing that a minute ago, 1 John 5:3. For this is the love of God that we keep His commandments. This is my favorite part of the verse. His commandments are not burdensome.
Right.
People say it's so hard to please God in this world. No, it's not. It's our attitude. It needs to change. Need to work on it.
And the commandments of God are especially not burdensome when compared to what? Especially what? I'm thinking the Old Testament. Remember Acts 15? Why do you put a burden on them which nobody could keep? We have freedom in Christ. Freedom from what? From that old law, because nobody could keep it. And the new commandments aren't burdensome. Who has songs? George Tweedy does. So if you have an announcement, get it to George Tweedy now, and in a few minutes he'll stand up and lead us in a short period of worship. But for now, a couple minute break.